This month, The Spectator becomes the first magazine in history to print 10,000 issues, and we'd like to celebrate with you. Subscribe to The Spectator for 12 weeks for just £12. Plus, we'll send you a bottle of commemorative Spectator gin, absolutely free. Go to spectator.co.uk/celebrate.
Hello and welcome to a special Saturday edition of Coffee House Shots. I'm Katie Balls. This week ought to have been the week when pupils return to school for the first day of term after the Easter holiday. Instead, parents are having to get to grips with homeschooling as the coronavirus lockdown goes on. But each child's experience will be different, and for many, a prolonged period out of the classroom could bring with it many problems. A study by the Sutton Trust, released earlier this week, found that two-thirds of children have not taken part in online lessons during the lockdown. To discuss the findings and what ought to come next, I'm joined by Fraser Nelson and the Chief Executive of the Sutton Trust, James Turner. James, could we start by talking about that study I just mentioned? What were your main findings?
Yeah, so we've got a big concern that while young people are not at school, that this attainment gap is going to widen between disadvantaged students and everybody else. We know that when kids go on summer holidays, for example, disadvantaged kids are behind over those 6 weeks away than when they were before the holidays. And so we were interested in how online tuition, remote learning is reaching those poorer students, and is it doing something to mitigate the impact of school closures? And we found there were big inequalities in access to remote learning. So that was in terms of the likelihood of poorer students actually engaging in home learning or online learning in the first place, but also the time they committed to it, and also the quality of the work that teachers got back. So if you're an independent school, if you're in an affluent state school, you are much more likely to be engaging in a substantial way with this sort of online learning.
Fraser, we often talk about the hidden costs of lockdown, and it seems that education, perhaps the inequality gap, is going to be one of those stories that increases as time goes on. One of the things in the study was the fact that pupils at private schools are more than twice as likely to receive daily online tuition. Do you think enough is being done to address this at the moment?
No, I'm actually quite alarmed by how little research is going on here. It's like we assume that people are working from home, but first of all, how many households are lucky enough to have like a laptop per kid in this? Not very many will. And also, what sort of tuition do you get? I've seen some private schools that are giving pretty good tuition online. For every lesson, there's a 20-minute speech by the teacher. Kids get asked questions randomly throughout the lesson to make sure they're paying attention. Homework is scanned in. I mean, it takes a lot of resources to do that. Private schools have got those resources. But then again, you hear, by contrast, state schools where the day's lesson is just something on the website saying, here you go, kids. Here's your homework today. Good luck with it. Now, this isn't across the whole state sector. This is just anecdotal. But it's an example of just how much variance there can be in homeschooling and online education between the schools that are kitted out with lots of resources to do it well and the state schools who have never been in this situation before. Now, of course, hardly any teachers have been in a situation before like this, but some of them are better equipped than others. And my main concern here is that there are a lot of things that are going to come back after this lockdown. The economy is going to recover, probably quite quickly. A lot of things are going to be repaired. But what we're seeing now is children losing irreplaceable days of education. And there was a fascinating study done by the Norwegian government where they pointed out that every day they miss now will take away something like 160 euros off their lifetime earning potential. This is time they're never going to get back. And it's something we should be worrying about a lot more, I think, than we are.
James, on that, we don't know when pupils are going to return to schools. Some are talking about half term. But do you think more thinking needs to be done about how to address what is going to be perhaps an education gap between those children who are more privileged in some ways in terms of the household they are staying in right now and those who just are not getting that level of support?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think what we do over the next few weeks or months is going to have a legacy for these young people for years to come. And we're going to see it wash through the education system and the economy. So I think trying to do something immediately to try to mitigate some of the issues that are caused by school closures, and then also think about what can we do when schools do go back, whether that's June or September or whenever it is, to help these kids who are already behind, of course, help them catch up and give them the extra resource they need so they're not as far behind. I think we need to think very seriously about this, because as Fraser said, there is this big gap between what at present poorer students are getting at home and what those from better off backgrounds are getting.
Fraser, as I mentioned there is quite a lot of uncertainty right now as to lots of things when it comes to any return to normality. We've had the Chief Medical Officer, Chris Whitty, suggest this week that social distancing will continue in some form, perhaps quite a significant form, for the calendar year. So where do you think schools are in terms of cabinet view on importance of what should come first when it comes to lockdown easing?
Depressingly, I think Britain is going to be behind a lot of other countries in grasping the extent of the educational damage that we're inflicting on children right now. It emerged yesterday, for example, that the Norwegian health advisor advised the government not to disband the schools as a result of the virus, because simply there isn't much evidence to show that doing so would significantly slow the virus. In the government's pandemic planning, that was also the assumption. Sure, if a virus particularly affects children, like the 1957 flu did, but this one specifically seems to leave out children. There was even a study in France showing there was a guy who's a young boy, about 9 years old, who passed 150 people and didn't pass it on. So children are not particularly susceptible to it. There's nothing to say that they're particularly contagious either and carriers of this disease. And yet we are still disbanding the schools out of a reflex, really, with very little thought. And when you look at the studies that have been done on this, this has been gamed time and time again. For the last 100 years, studies have been done asking, what's the cost-benefit analysis of disbanding schools? And each of these studies says that it doesn't make very much impact on the spread of a virus, but it makes a lot of impact on the life chances of the children. And the majority of studies have shown that you need pretty extreme circumstances to deprive children of their education. Those circumstances are simply not met with coronavirus. Children should be going to school as they are in Sweden and as they are now doing in Denmark. And when lockdown ends, a resumption of school, I think, should be the very first thing that we do.
James, this is an understatement, but we're clearly living in, you know, imperfect times when it comes to the options that are available. So I wondered, I mean, we've had the BBC have come forward with some learning tools. We had Nicola Sturgeon yesterday talking about how pupils might return to school, but one thing that would have to be done potentially is social distancing in a classroom. What is the, you know, the best worst case scenario right now? Do you think that the gap that is likely to grow can only really be dealt with when pupils are physically in a class, or are there other significant things that can be done?
Well, I think the gap is going to grow, and the question is how can we make it grow as little as possible? I think while we are stuck with schools being out, it's not a hopeless situation. I think some of the evidence does show that remote learning can be as effective as face-to-face teaching. But the key is the quality of that. It's not quantity. It's not throwing the kitchen sink at the issue. It's doing sort of tailored, personalised lessons where there's actually an interaction. I think that's what we need to be able to support schools to do more in this environment. But then as we look forward to when schools going back, I think we're going to have to be quite imaginative about how we're going to help these kids catch up. So we need to be looking at things like the staggered return to school, which prioritises the poorest. Is there some role for summer schools or summer schemes during July and August to help the poorest catch up? We may have to put in ongoing tutoring, some of the most effective interventions, medium term for these students as well, because we're not going to be able to get over this in the matter of a few weeks or months. It's a year-long or more endeavour.
I'm not sure that I would agree with a staggered return from school on the poorest. I think all children should go back immediately. If it's going to be staggering, it should be done by age. We know, for example, that the damage is at its worst amongst primary school children. Once you get to be in sixth form level, there's more you can do by yourself. I don't see why we should really be waiting. And also, I'm not quite sure how I would even judge the deprivation of schools to say that they can go back. And meanwhile, there are instant things that can be done. I think the school's inspectors, for example, should be moving quite quickly to ask what kind of tuition is being given in online circumstances. What proportion of schools, even primary schools, are putting a teacher out on a video or having homework done every day? There ought to be some basic guidelines, because right now there is hardly anything. The most the inspectors have said is that they're going to stop inspections during the lockdown. Well, of course they are. But they should be moving very, very quickly to be making clear what the minimum standard ought to be.
Fraser, just on the more vulnerable pupils, we're talking about whether or not the government should say pupils should all go back to school. But ultimately, there is another issue here, which is the government have actually been surprised at something you've written about, at the low level of uptake, in the sense that there are now a very small percentage of the school population going to school, and actually more could. You could have more pupils who would be categorised as vulnerable taking up the offer of going to schools now, but they're not. So potentially there could be movement here without any more interaction if there was a better way of targeting, do you think?
Yeah, well, originally the government thought that 20% of children would still go to school. That's the children of key workers, and also, hugely importantly, those categorised as being vulnerable. In other words, children who actually are at risk if they're kept at home. As it turned out, just 2% of children turned up. Now, why is that? One of the reasons was that the schools were actually putting out different guidance to the government. A lot of schools were saying that you must only take your children to school in extreme circumstances if there's absolutely no way you can educate them at home. That wasn't what the government was saying. The government was saying, if you're a key worker, please do send your children to school. But the government wasn't very clear either. The government should have said that it's really important. If you can send your children to school, then do send your children to school. Now, as a result, you get the children, when they do turn up to school, what do they see? Do they get tuition? A lot of them, the answer is not really. They just get plonked into a room and given an iPad and told to get on with it. And they think to themselves, well, if this is a situation, I might as well do it at home than do it in a classroom. So again, there's lots of questions to be asked as to what education the children of vulnerable and key workers should be getting. Also special needs children as well. Very difficult to give them the extra care they need online. So there's so many things the government should be doing, but at the very minimum, they should right now be doing what they intended to do in the first place, which is to make sure there's 1 in 5 children are going back to school, especially the children categorised as being vulnerable.
Thank you, Fraser. Thank you, James. And while I have you here, for those adults in lockdown who are perhaps beginning to feel the limits of the current setup, do check out the latest episode of the Women with Balls podcast, where I speak to Ruby Wax, the comedian, writer and mental health campaigner, and it includes some lockdown tips.